Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
Welcome, ladies and gentle persons, to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight. Here at WCAP, 980 on your dial. Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets. We are here tonight and every Monday night between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing you a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Well, tonight, my fellow truth seekers, we go beneath the surface on the topic of men giving up on marriage because the claim is, quote, women aren't women anymore. Yes, you heard it right. Men giving up on marriage because women aren't women anymore. To assist us in explaining what this means, and to delve beneath the surface on the entire related topic, there he is, ladies and gentlemen, the indefatigable, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
Glad to be here. And glad to be indefatigable, or whatever the word you said
you
was.
You are indefatigable.
Indefatigable.
Yes.
All right, that was an emphatic indefatigable.
No, it's not indefatigable.
Am I that, though?
You got to say the word right. First of all, Cindy, all we're hearing is distortion over here.
Yeah, go to the other microphone.
I'm hearing it on mine, too.
This microphone?
Okay, try that.
That sounds way better.
All right.
Fantabulous.
I'll do this one. What about this one? This one's a little closer. Can I do that one?
Yeah, that one's good,
too. Yeah.
All right.
Why not? It's okay, dueling mics here.
I'm going to turn the distorting microphone.
You do that. Now, indefatigable, of course.
I want my words to be distorted.
if you look at the word, the accent is on one syllable, but if you shift the accent, the word is indefatigable.
Okay.
Which means that you are not fatigable.
Oh wow, I'd have to dispute that. I'm feeling pretty fatigable at the moment.
I know you run around, you know, everywhere and always.
Yeah, we do a lot of stuff.
And
yep.
you're picking people up and driving people places and doing all kinds of guck that I just get exhausted thinking about.
I get exhausted doing it, so I'm not surprised that you get exhausted thinking about it. I'll bet you recover more easily than I do, though.
By sitting there thinking about it? maybe.
Or no, recover. From thinking about it more easily than I recover from doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to measure that.
Yeah.
And there behind the glass, of course, is the rock star DJ herself, Cindy, Vinyl Girl. Hello, Vinyl Girl. How are you?
How you doing?
Now, there was a famous, we've often referred to Cindy as Cindy Behind the Glass and then as CBG for that. And it just brings to mind the famous nightclub CBGBs.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it?
I don't think I've ever been there, though.
I have. I think I have once.
I may have been there. I remember being in a dark and gloomy
sort of... I used to live out in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then, no. I'm thinking of... There was a place in New York. There was a place in New York that I'm thinking of. So, yeah, I've never been to L.A., so I couldn't have been to that.
All right. But anyway, that nickname of Cindy's got the squash immediately. I don't know if you know
that. Did
it
really?
Yeah.
I missed that.
She did not like it. She's smiling at me right now.
All right.
So, because, you know, I try not to...
CBG or Cindy Behind the Glass or both?
Is it both? Is it CBG and Cindy Behind the Glass, Cindy?
I hate both of those. Yes. Don't use them anymore.
There you go.
All right.
She hates both of them.
Good to know.
And I try to respect what people hate in terms of what they're called.
Thank you, Cindy. Yes. Do you have a nickname that you go by? Or you just...
Vinyl Girl.
Oh, there you go. Vinyl Girl, hence the title of the show.
She is the star. She is the star of the WCAP show right after this one. And...
Cindy, I have to tell you, I thought of you a couple nights ago. I went to pick up my daughter from a friend's house and looked in the, as I'm standing there in their house, I looked in the living room. They had a couple of milk crates full of LPs.
Awesome.
Yeah. And what's even better is I looked at the dad and I said, wow, look at those records. I haven't, I saw this guy in concert and blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, well, the reason why those are out is because my 17-year-old son just got a turntable and he wants to break out the old vinyl.
It's coming back,
isn't
Kent?
It?
But when I'm sitting here flabbergasted at why that is so.
I'm sitting here indefatigable.
Well, the problem with the new vinyl that's coming out is they're actually taking the CD quality of the Thriller album, for example. They're recording the Thriller album from a CD onto vinyl, so you're not getting the best sound quality that you got in
worse.
The 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
No, the reason why I'm bewildered is because don't you have milk crates of LPs from the 1970s?
I
do.
Ironically, no, because in all my many moves, somehow they got left behind at some point, and I couldn't even tell you where. I'm assuming they got left behind at the home I grew up in, and God knows what happened to them after that.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind
of tragic. I wish I had some of those.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454. Let me try that again. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Now, our topic for tonight is this notion of young men giving up on marriage because, according to them, and according to the study that Kent is going to talk about, we both read it off the internet, because the claim is that women aren't women anymore. So the first thing I want to say, Kent, is that I do want to delve beneath the surface on this notion that women aren't women anymore, but... Wouldn't you also say, before we get into that both sexes aren't each other anymore?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think this article looks at one side of the problem, but the problem is not one-sided.
And of course, since we're the two halves of humanity, male and female, obviously the dynamic is going to change both if the dynamic has changed at all.
Sure. If one fails... The whole dynamic fails.
Yeah.
The union fails.
And so if women become more like men, and then men are going to become more like women to complement the whole thing in order for anything to work.
Yeah.
Right?
Or other things. Women become unlike either men or women, and men become unlike either men or women, and we become
more like animals.
Yeah, more like animals. More like just sort of these creatures that follow their basest instincts, their base desires.
Right. So in a sense, when women aren't women anymore and men aren't men anymore, it sort of follows that we're not going to be fully human anymore.
Exactly. And then neither one of us is going to be able to get along with the other
because
of it.
All right. So let's delve beneath the surface. How did this begin and where did the mentality begin and why is it here today?
Well, according to the article, the article begins with this discovery that a woman... by the name of Hillary White, Susan Venker wrote a book She was interviewing a lot of young men. What she discovered is that give me a second here.
Yeah. I have all night until 11.
18 to 34. Okay. Women ages 18 to 34 say that having a successful marriage is one of the most important things in their lives. And this rose 9 percentage points since 20 years ago, 1997.
Okay, so since let me just clarify this for the audience. Since 1997,
20 years,
young women have actually valued marriage more than they used to in 20 years ago.
Right.
According to the survey.
It's one of the most important things to them. Number of women who say yes to that question.
One of the most important things to me?
Right. Yeah. It's gone from 28% of women respondents 20 years ago to 37%.
Okay,
now.
So it's gone up.
Correct.
I think it's a little bizarre that it's still that low, but that's another question. Yeah.
But it's an excellent point. Yeah. Now, interestingly, during the same time period, what happened for men is almost identical in the opposite direction.
The mirror opposite.
Right. For men, 20 years ago, 35% of them said that was one of the most important things to them, a successful marriage.
Yes.
And nowadays it's 29%. So we're moving in opposite directions.
For the past 20 years.
20 years.
And it attributes it to what, this movement?
This article says, the article is sort of a synopsis of the book that this woman wrote. Her name is Susan Vanker. The title of the book is in here somewhere, but I can't find it. But Susan Vanker wrote this article, and she attributes it to a direction that the feminist movement took.
Okay.
When I read it, my mind immediately went to Gloria Steinem's quote, famous quote, women need men like fish need bicycles.
Yes.
So if that's going to be the sentiment behind feminism, or let's say mainstream feminism, or even you could just say a large prevailing segment of feminism, men are going to end up alienated at the very least, or also have to think, well, then what purpose do I have in terms of women? If women need men like fish need a bike, what role could I possibly play for women?
Couple of quotes here from, I believe it's the same book. This new phenomenon has changed the dance between men and women. Now that's huge, because there is a particular natural dance that corresponds to the masculine and the feminine in the human race that needs to be respected, or something's going to be out of balance.
Yeah, one of the claims of these articles, the Susan Vanker article and the Hillary White article from LifeSite News, which is reporting on Susan Vanker's research, makes the point that men don't want to argue with women. They want to provide for them and serve them. And so if a significant segment of the feminist movement takes the approach that women need men like fish need a bike, then there is no way for a man to serve.
To provide and serve.
There's no room for it.
Do you actually think that there are women out there that believe that?
Boy, I'm not a mind reader.
I tell you why I asked that question. There seems to be a prevailing thought that men aren't men anymore because they're not doing these things. And where are the good, marriageable men anymore? And hence, it seems like there's both of those contradictory claims by women today.
Yeah,
that are happening simultaneously.
And I think they are right in saying that men aren't men anymore.
Correct.
But I think at the very least, what we have is a chicken and egg argument.
Right.
So what I tend to think is, you know, we've had many shows about, say, abortion, right? Mm-hmm. And we've said, you know, not a good choice, bad choice, should abortion should never happen, et cetera, et cetera. But we've also pointed out again and again that overwhelmingly the women who get abortions say they felt like they had no choice. They felt like they were alone. they felt like they had no one to help them with this. And so the question is, who would be the ideal person to solve that scenario?
The father or the child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the question is, where is the father, right?
Right.
And the question is, why did abortion ever come on the scene in the first place?
Well, the notion of deadbeat daddom,
yes,
or deadbeat fatherhood, is,
yep,
is very mirror complementary to the abortion movement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
In other words, both sexes have decided not to take responsibility for their actions,
exactly,
which produce offspring.
Right. And what happened with the sexual revolution, of which feminism coincided at the very least, if it wasn't segment of, was that men were now in a position, women, the appeal of contraception and abortion to women is that I won't be alone with a baby.
Yeah.
Right? To raise this baby by myself. I can understand that rationale. However,
well, in times past,
yep,
when women thought, I don't want to be alone with a baby, they did not have sexual
relations.
Exactly.
Right. But, nevertheless, they always felt the pressure to do so.
Well, yes.
Right?
They always felt the pressure from men that had less than ideal morals and,
exactly,
and values.
Exactly. So there you,
yes,
have the men failing to be real men.
That's correct.
They're being more like animals than men.
Yes.
So women see this abortion contraception thing and they say, there's the solution.
It's a reactionary movement against the abuse of males for all of,
right,
history.
No. Men behaving badly.
Right.
So, and then,
and
so,
of course, it's a very, very unhealthy and unnatural extreme that they've gone to. They threw away the literally they threw away the baby with the bathwater.
Sure.
In the abortion and contraception movement.
Now, here's another irony that's, yeah, the point that's made in the article. Okay. By the way, I should explicitly say the Susan Venker article is called The War on Men, and it's from November 26, 2012, FoxNews.com. The Hillary White article that's discussing the Susan Venker research is Young Men Giving Up on Marriage, Women Aren't Women Anymore, and that's from LifeSite News,
okay,
from January 10th, 2013. Now, what the irony that happens, so you have these men behaving badly, not being real men,
yeah,
but being more like scoundrels, animals, etc. So you have, then you have women saying, here's a solution, abortion and contraception, right? I don't have to, I can give in to the pressure to have sexual relations, but then I have this, I don't have to have kids, right? So now,
yeah, wait, I'm sorry, but that mentality right there did not exist in the masses until contraception.
That's, yeah, right, that's what I'm saying,
so
is
this,
that once that came on the scene,
then,
women
then
turned
they,
to it.
Okay,
right.
Then they could say, yes, I can give in to this pressure and I can be just like men.
Right, as long as I have the contraception.
Exactly.
It's a win-win.
Right.
However, the irony is that since then, men have only not gotten any better, they've gotten worse, because now the male rationale is, wow, I don't have to take care of this girl.
Right.
She has no reason to deny me because she's got contraception.
Right. And there is no sense of morals or values in that. You know, what many men are saying is, if they want me to use them, I'm going to take advantage of that.
Right.
It's this whole adult consent thing. She's an adult. She's saying, yes, I'm gonna go for it.
Right.
And then, you know.
So what we have here is men behaving badly, women turning to something that they see as a solution,
which enable men to behave much worse.
To behave much worse
against women.
And then so now,
yeah,
here we are almost 50 years after abortion, contraception, the sexual revolution, the feminist movement, and now you have just an utter disintegration.
Yes.
You have basically men saying, forget it.
Yes.
I'm not going
to
do it.
And they're saying forget it. While they're saying forget it to marriage, they seem to be also saying forget it to life.
Exactly, because the article makes the point that,
yes,
men are becoming slackers.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
So the idea is that men are motivated,
yeah,
by provide, you know, being
traditional
a
male.
Helper,
yes,
a companion, a supporter, a provider for women and the families. And when the women say, well, I need you like a fish needs a bike, the purpose, that yeah. motivation for providing for women seems to vanish.
Hmm. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 if you want to get involved in our conversation.
So now what you've gotten, you have men behaving badly, women yeah. who hung in there for a very long time. Of course, we're speaking in very general terms because I'm sure there are still great men out there and I'm sure there are still great women out there, but we certainly have something else going on in society where, like you said, even just the statistic
yeah.
that we're at a high of 37% of women saying that a successful marriage is important to them. Why is it? Why is it even only 30? Why isn't it 90? Why isn't it 100?
Well, can I?
And the same for men.
Let me read you a meme that I put up on my Facebook page that
right.
I think is very telling. It's a man. This is the quote. It's a man's job to respect a woman, but it's a woman's job to give her something to respect. This is such a deep problem and a spiraling problem.
Yes.
It seems like men can no longer respect women since women have become, since women have dived into the quicksand of the sexual revolution. How yeah. can you cherish as your own flesh, which traditionally men have done for women, and hence they
or
want
ought to have done.
Or
that's
ought to
the
have
ideal.
Done. Exactly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How can you, if she has soiled herself in the ways of the world to the point where it's impossible to do so?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the same can be said for mm-hmm. men too. How can a woman trust a man who's had multiple partners
right.
by the time they meet?
How can, yes.
What sort of habits has he formed? And this is
yeah.
we could say this going in both directions, for men
yes.
looking at women, for women looking at men. this is what the sexual revolution does. We are articles are showing us the bitter fruit of that.
We practice for years. We practice for divorce.
Right.
That's what the quote unquote premarital relationship culture has taught us to do. It's
right.
it's basically
hook up and break
up. Hook up and break up. The
yep.
heart gets less and less open to love.
It's more calloused,
more scarred, and hence yep. divorce is almost inevitable. And these kids know it, and they say, since divorce is so inevitable, or at least potentially inevitable, I don't even want to get into it. And I understand the fear of divorce. It makes sense.
Exactly. 978-454-4980
is our phone number. Looks like we have a telephone call. Dan from Billerica, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
How you doing? Kent, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. Thanks for calling in. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too.
So what do you think of the topic tonight?
Yeah, so I read the article earlier, and like an overview, I just, being in the midst of like this generation, because I'm 23, so I'm like, you know, I did the whole college scene and everything like that, and
okay.
the basis to me of like, you know, where are the men and why the girls are acting like this is our culture is just like, you're born into it, you're born into this very individualistic, me, self, you know, gratification. And it's just, it produces all these things.
Could I ask you a question, Dan?
Yes.
What do you think could combat that cultural influence the most?
You say that again?
What do you think could combat that cultural influence?
Yeah, is there anything, any influences out there? Is there anything in the culture? Is there a refuge that you could go to work against that, or to find some sort of...
To rise above that. What do you think, Dan?
Well, for me, it was you know, humbling myself before my own creator. And doing that and realizing the effects of, like, my own promiscuous...
Yeah.
And me just wanting to feed all my own selfish desires, and just seeing all the detrimental effects of it, and that alone for me is what made me change my ways from, you know.
So the answer,
the way I had before my conversion 2 years ago.
Okay, so then you had a religious conversion, and it made you see all of the detrimental effects that have come from this.
Yeah.
Interesting, Kent. It seems like people, if they don't have the light of God in their lives, it's virtually impossible to see the disgusting darkness of the sexual revolution.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Now, Dan, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So apparently, you had your faith to turn to, or it was sort of out there for you as an option, right? From your promiscuity and so on, you had neglected it perhaps, and when you sort of hit a dead end or hit a wall, you said all of a sudden there was your faith, and you said, here it is, it's been here all the time. I kind of see the logic in it, but sort of finding it out the hard way. However, you said you're 23 years old. Among peers, among the people that you were living this lifestyle with, I'm sure you encountered some of them who didn't necessarily have that at hand to turn to.
Yeah.
What do you see them doing? Do they, first of all, do they ever sort of hit that rock bottom? And if they do, is that
enough?
Religion even an option? Do they even consider it?
Yeah. For me, so I still hang out with those people, but I keep them, you know, I keep them at a distance, and I separate myself when I need to. But when I'm around them and I share my faith and I share like the freedom that comes from virtues and try to control yourself in that way, and I tell them the liberation that you have internally from being able to control yourself and to be a man, basically, and it's for that. That's the only thing I can really, you know, share with them, because once I start going into my faith and all this stuff, and that's just taking a bigger step. How do you put it? It's just it's very difficult, but it's just offering the option of like, when you control yourself and you can control those inner desires and stuff like that, there's a peace to it.
Dan, let me just interrupt you for a sec. If you can hear the music, we need to take a break. Do you want to hold and we can continue this conversation, or do you need to take off?
No, I can stay around.
All right. Thanks. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980, 1031 at the moment. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. And we're back. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface. Glad you could join us tonight. We're here until 11 o'clock. And tonight's topic is, where did it go? There it is. Men giving up on marriage because women aren't women anymore. And we were talking about that before the break with Kent, an article that was, who is it by again?
Two articles. One was Susan Venker, and then the other article.
And
Susan,
her article is
she's the author of a study.
Author of a study, exactly.
On FoxNews.com, yeah, right. And Hillary White, who wrote about it on LifeSite News.
Okay, so apparently young men are giving up on marriage, and after talking about it a bit, Dan from Billerica gave us a call, giving us a personal testimony about why some young people are giving up on marriage. And what I got so far, and I believe Dan is still with us, is that Dan was telling us that in a sense it's very easy to fall into the quicksand of the sexualized me culture that we live in today, vis-a-vis the sexual revolution, and it's very difficult to see anything but that when you're in that quicksand, because every, quote unquote, everybody's doing it, especially in the high school and college communities. And what I got from you, Dan, last segment was you were able to, in mind and heart, rise above the cultural milieu in which you were in, because of the light of Christ that you received from your religion. Now, what religion was that, Dan?
Excuse me?
What religion are you?
Catholic.
Okay. Through your Catholic faith, you were able to rise above that, see it for what it is, and see the entire generation for the wrong that it's doing. So that's a very important gift, I think, Dan, that you have. Now, the question I think that Kent is going to ask you next is, for all of those who don't have a deep faith in God, what is the alternative other than deep depression that they have at their hands? Is that fair, Kent?
Well, the way I think of it is that I know I was not raised religiously, and I was as secular and as sort of non-religious as you could be, and my experience probably mirrored Dan's experience in a lot of ways. And for me, there was a Catholic friend in my life, and actually I started out as opposing him, but realized in my attempt to refute him, I got refuted by, not even by him, but just by the facts.
Right.
So, Dan, I believe you said that you were raised in the Catholic faith. You didn't really own it, though, until you sort of had this...
Completely rejected it.
Yeah,
Completely rejected it.
Wait, before you go any further, why, Dan? Well, I think this is important. Why did you reject it?
Due to some circumstances in my childhood, I held on to a grudge, and I didn't want to listen to what my father and my mother had to say about the faith. Yeah, I believed in God and stuff like that, but it's just like, I wanted to do it my way, and that's it. Like, this whole God thing, you're there. But in my mind, it was just somebody that was this deity up in the sky that was at a distance.
Right, right.
And just viewing things and didn't want to have any personal relationship, nada, with me. So...
Okay.
I kept it like that, and basically, long story short, my conversion was God kind of trapped me in the corner with a little thing called silence.
Yeah.
And due to my circumstance, I couldn't run. And in the silence, there's truth. And then in truth, there's love. And then once you receive that love, and you feel it in your heart, and it fills the little hole that everyone has in their heart, then you know that you don't really need anything else besides that.
You know what, Dan? So many people today are running from silence because they fear that silence and what it's going to tell them.
Earbuds.
Yeah.
I was with a Franciscan order about 2 weeks ago in their priory up in Vermont. And it was basically like a silent week. And I'll still tell you, being in the silence is still the scariest thing, but there's growth and there's truth, and you can't run away from it.
Now,
and all it is healing you.
It's healing.
This generation, this culture that I live in, needs silence.
Yeah.
We don't have silence. There's
Amen.
So much noise around.
Because of that,
it's creating all these the exact issues that you guys have been talking about for the past 20 minutes.
I agree.
People are running away from the quiet, from truth, from love.
We could do a whole show on this.
God wants to fill these holes.
And
when we're seeking it in different ways, it's just we're digging our own graves.
I can't agree with you more, and I would love for you to talk for the rest of the hour. We do have another call waiting, though. Wait a minute. He hung up. Okay. Mike from Drake, call back.
Dan, let me just follow up with you.
Yeah, why don't you quickly ask your question?
It's fantastic that you ended up with these opportunities and all the things that went into creating those opportunities for you, as painful as it was, and sounds like it still may be. But what about the people who they just don't get it? What do they do? You tell them about God, it just seems too foreign and strange.
You tell them about silence,
they don't get it. Yeah. What do they do? Where do they turn?
This is a little off topic, but that's one of my big questions, is why do I have this gift? And not that person, because that's how much I want them to have it. But it's so hard to explain it to people that don't have it, though.
So do they continue to just plunge deeper and deeper into this destructive...
The thing is, an experience with God's love, which everyone can have, is a very subjective experience.
Right.
And how do you explain that to somebody?
You
can't. It's so hard. You can only reflect it in your behavior. And that's what I do.
So what do you see them doing when they don't get it? Where do they go? What do they do? Do they just plunge deeper into the lifestyle, or do they just end up getting
depressed? Yeah, what do your friends do? Go ahead.
for me, so I still have a lot of secular friends. I still have a lot of worldly friends, and I that was a huge dilemma I had, but to some counsel that I got, I was told that I should keep them and just keep myself at a distance and just be careful.
Right.
And what I do is I pray for them, and I just be with them in the midst with them and just be an example. And then when the opportunity arises to talk about where I get my strength and where I get my, you know, ability to take the next step every day in life, I explain it in a very simple, natural way. And hopefully through those words, they will touch their heart, and then something can happen where they see something, and they see grace, they see peace, they see joy, and then they internalize that some way, and then they change, and that it's just a whole ripple effect. But I'm a big advocate of just speaking, you know, through my behaviors. Like I realized something. I haven't had a conversation with somebody where I walked away from the conversation and really changed the person's views.
Right.
I've had one or two people come up to me in the past year and said, like, the way I acted had more influence in than me speaking. But it's funny how that works, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't debate and all that stuff, but
you have to live it.
It's funny how behavior speaks very loudly.
Both are very important, and of course, it depends on the situation. You're right. Behavior speaks very loudly, and sometimes words do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if your words and your behavior don't correspond, it's a problem.
Then there's a problem.
Yeah.
I talk about the virtue of chastity with my friends, and they look at me with like 9 heads because they don't understand a 23-year-old that doesn't look at porn or masturbates.
Yeah.
And they don't get it. But I tell them.
They're not there yet.
There's freedom and there's peace in controlling yourself. And it's funny, like, have you guys ever heard of the forum called Reddit?
Yes.
Yes.
So they have this tab, it's called NoFap Challenge. So it's basically men out in the world that do this challenge to see how long they don't, how long they cannot masturbate. And the apparently they see the benefits from it.
Wow.
But the thing is, they don't realize because they have the benefits, it's a spiritual element to it. And that's why they have peace, and they have more control, and they have more motivation, they have more all this stuff from just practicing a little thing called virtue.
Yeah.
But they can't put the name on it.
So would you say, now, like, to bring it all back to marriage and the marriage issue that we're dealing with, would you say that what we're seeing with young men and young women and all these problems in marriage is really the result of this selfishness or this this conflict?
Yes, it's 100% just independence. Nobody wants to have more responsibility than, you know, responsibility that doesn't involve making money or getting them higher places in power. And it's all self.
Sure.
And the thing is, marriage, you got to give yourself away. But if you don't know how to, do that, you're just focused on yourself, obviously you don't want to get married. And it makes sense when I talk to my friends, and none of them are thinking about marriage. When it's even discussed, it's just like, no, that's something you do when you're like in your 30s.
Mm.
And you can't do anything else.
Mm.
It's
when you can't do anything else. In other words, when all the other options fall away, then you might as well get married.
Yeah, so it's basically just
but at
all
that
selfish motives for not wanting to get married.
So now at that point, if you're going
produced.
So at that point,
hedonism.
At that point, if you're going to turn to marriage in your 30s after you've lived this lifestyle of selfishness and promiscuity, you've formed all the worst habits. Right? You formed all the worst habits, and that's what you're bringing into the marriage.
And that's why the divorce happens, and then you have the kid, and then the kid's affected by the divorce. And then it's just like it's a vicious cycle,
absolutely. And this is why so many people don't.
It's so scary because, like, I 2 years ago I didn't realize any of this, but now since like I'm getting the light shown on me, it's just like, wow.
It puts it all in perspective.
I wish I was born in the 40s, but that's not the case.
Yeah, you were born in the blindest time, and not only American history, but in the
world
history of Western,
history,
yeah,
when
Western
civilization.
Exactly,
sure.
Precisely.
Yep. Yeah.
Dan, we need to...
What's that?
I'm sorry. Give us your last word, because we need to move on a little bit, and we really, really appreciate what you've told us, though, so far tonight.
Yeah, and the scariest part of it all is in the pockets of every single male in this country, basically, between the ages of 18 and 35, is a cell phone. And in that cell phone, they can go to any porn website in the world and immediately train their brains to objectify females.
Yeah.
And without faith, without any type of, you know, self-restraint, that's not going to stop. And that's scary. That's very scary.
Actually, it is. Our future brain surgeons, our future, presidents are all being formed, and their brains are being wired in this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. Distorted way, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And that just all goes right back into the topic you guys were talking about. Like, there's so many factors to why the issue you guys are talking about is the issues. Like, it's just like there's very complex.
All right. Well, Dan, we need to thank you so much for giving us a call spontaneously, Dan from Billerica. And I do hope that you call again. We are Beneath the Surface is here 10 to 11 every single week.
All right.
All right. God bless you, Dan.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right.
There's
Dan.
Someone who's living it.
Dan from Billerica.
Right. You know, actually, I should have asked him, or would it be interesting to hear from Dan about how he sees himself. Does he see himself? He mentioned spending some time with some Franciscans.
Yeah.
Does he see himself as possibly getting married, or does he see himself as looking towards the life of a Franciscan? But knowing what he knows, you know, my first thought when he first started talking was, boy, the way he's talking is going to be very appealing to any women listening.
Yeah.
How he thinks chastity is important, how he thinks that marriage is all about giving yourself completely to your spouse, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that sense, okay, maybe it's hard to find someone who gets it,
right?
But is it still worth trying, right?
Yes, it's still worth trying. Even if it might take you years, it might take you decades to find somebody who appreciates that and who believes that and who lives that.
Right.
But there is no really viable alternative.
Sure.
All right, 978-454-4980 is our phone number. We did have another phone call. He hung up, so if you want to call back, phone lines are free. 978-454-4980, our topic tonight again. Men giving up on marriage because of the claim that women aren't women anymore. But, Kent, as Dan mentioned, in a very concrete sense, men are wasting their lives away, particularly in the pornography explosion.
Right.
I mean, if they're getting this kind of self-gratification with pornography, then what is that extra motivation to find a real woman and have a real relationship with?
Right. And not only that, even if they have the motivation, if they say, boy, this porn is great, but boy, I'd like to experience it with a real woman, how can they even begin to approach a real woman when their sense of a woman
is
formed by porn?
All distorted.
Yeah. Right. So they're going to approach a woman basically with the single motive of living out a porn
as an object and not a person.
Exactly.
And persons are all different.
And it's certainly not, I'm seeking a real woman to give myself completely to in every way, shape, or form. The motive is I'm seeking a real woman to take and take and take from.
Yeah.
How can there be marriage with this sort of attitude? And of course, you could see on the women's part how they would be aware of this, even if they aren't explicitly aware of it, they can certainly sense it.
Right.
And if they sense it, in what way are they going to trust a man? In what way are they going to see themselves as a helpmate, you know, a partner with a man? They're going to see themselves as a tool of a man.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know about majority, but a great number of women today see themselves as a tool, an instrument for men's pleasure, and accept it.
Right.
And hence you have...
But it's not a solution.
It just goes
deeper into the problem.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
That goes without saying.
Exactly.
With us. But that's the part of the sadness of this whole deal, is that women have become... I'm going to say it because every other generation in human history has used this kind of terminology. Once women became harlots in Western civilization by virtue of accepting what the pill has to offer, they no longer respect themselves, and they no longer see themselves as worthy of somebody who is a virtuous, good, marriageable man.
And they certainly don't respect men because they see themselves as being in that position
because
of men behaving badly or not being the type of men that they're supposed to be. In fact, being real men.
Right.
Right. So with this sort of... self-loathing on both parts, right?
Yeah, yes.
Women are hating themselves because of contraception and abortion. Yeah, men are hating themselves because they realize their vocation is to love women, and they realize that they're utterly, they're largely incapable of it, if not utterly incapable of it. And most women aren't even opening that door for them because they absolutely won't trust them from the outset.
And men don't trust women from the outset because they've had several partners and they can't cherish them anymore as their own flesh.
And, you know, trust is a mutual thing,
it
right?
Is.
The way that it works is you each have to be open to... it sounds ironic to put it this way. Mm. You have to be open to being wounded in order to thrive. You have to make yourself vulnerable to the other person.
But if you've been wounded so many times...
You won't do it. It's just not there.
It's unnatural to have that openness to love fully.
Right. We're talking
about human nature here.
Right. The difference is you're not seeking to be wounded.
Right.
You're willing to risk being wounded.
Right. And when you seek love. Is that
exactly.
Right.
You're willing to risk being wounded, although you're not seeking to be wounded.
So what is the bottom line here? That the teachings of the church have always been right, and if people have listened to them and lived them, there wouldn't be these problems?
Exactly. As G.K. Chesterton said, Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried.
And what's interesting, in the past 40 years, and I know this is a constant theme of Beneath the Surface, but...
We're looking at 50 years now, Paul.
50 years. Only two of those Ten Commandments have really been challenged by the secular world in the past half century, and that is 5 and 6, those commandments relating to human sexuality and human life.
Mm,
and because human life, of course, is the byproduct, the natural
end. You should be specific with 5 and 6 because there are different lists of commandments.
Let me finish my sentence.
Number them differently.
The natural end of human sexuality.
Right. So...
So
thou shalt not commit adultery
is number 6, and thou shalt not kill is number 5. And
of
course, abortion is where both commandments meet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so illicit sexual activity always ends in death.
Right, and when you realize that we're at that point because men have failed to be men and women resorted to not being women as a response...
Right.
It's just spiraling downwards.
Yeah, it's could you say that it's completely out of control now?
I hate to be so absolutist about it. Let me ask you this. We had a caller tonight that
let me ask you this. Do you think that there is any solution to this other than a right relationship with God?
I don't see it. I think the three options are a right relationship with God,
right?
Indulging in this me selfishness that Dan talked about, the sort of sexual revolution
that makes you miserable.
Or if you're rejecting both, you're sort of in this no man's land with nothing. You're not in the hedonism of the sexual revolution. You're not in the peace in your soul of being right with God, and therefore you have nothing, and you're just depressed. You're bereft.
Yeah. I don't. It just seems like deep depression is the third alternative, if there is one.
Yeah.
The third option.
Right. I can't.
Deep and utter depression.
I can't come up with any other options.
In a sense, this is what's dangerous about being wise, especially when you're a young person. When you have a certain amount of wisdom, but without God, You can rise up above your culture and see it for what it is.
Right.
But you have no, at least in your mind,
then
you have
despair.
No, you have no alternative.
Right.
Yeah. And so what do you have? You either follow the crowd and you become miserable with them, or you become completely alienated and you become miserable on your own in that respect.
Right. And I think one of the manifestations of this is sort of the thrill-seeking, adrenaline rush type of culture, right? You're not necessarily getting the pleasure from hedonism. You're not turning to God. So you just look for adrenaline to feel good, right? Obviously, you could say drugs and alcohol, other sorts of addictions. That do nothing but either mask the pain or temporarily give you a break from it.
Let me just say, if anybody has any thoughts about this, or you want to share your experience, or any solutions that you want to share with us, go to my Facebook page, the Beneath the Surface Facebook page at Facebook.
Indefatigable.
At facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. That's all one word, fellow truth seekers. facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Let us know your thoughts about this whole situation, or perhaps your solutions. Last thing, let's end on a happy note, Kent, or a hopeful note.
Yes.
For those who are or feel like they are obsessed, even addicted, either sex, to what we've been talking about today, and they don't feel that they have the strength or the wherewithal to get themselves out of it and to live a healthy and happy life, what do you say to them?
The strength doesn't have to come from inside yourself. The strength ultimately is the source of all strength, and that's God. Dan, who called in, Dan from Billerica tonight, testified to that. He realized that when he was alone in the silence, that there was nothing there. The only true strength was other than him and God. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So God is always there,
silence.
And he doesn't abandon anybody.
Silence, ladies and gentlemen.
Silence can get you there.
I think that's step number one. Silence is so important.
Take your earbuds out of your ears.
To one's spiritual life and one's psychological health.
Right.
So seek some silence once a day if you can. And then something good will happen, I think.
I'm with you.
All right. Thank you, Kent.
All right. Onwards and upwards.
Thank you, Cindy. And Cindy's Vinyl Vault is next, so don't go anywhere. You have been, for the past hour, listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. That was Kent Niebuhr. Have a great week, everybody, and hopefully listen to you, or you'll listen to me, next week. Take care.
This is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.